The following program is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through NPR's Satellite Program Development Fund. Support for the distribution of this program is provided by National Public Radio member stations and the NPR Arts and Performance Fund. Contributors include the National Endowment for the Arts, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and Bell Atlantic. The Nature of Music series is produced by Garuda Productions, which is solely responsible for its content.
From Garuda Productions, The Nature of Music.
Creation is what God did, it's not what man did.
I'm Lynn Farmer. This time on The Nature of Music, we're investigating the creative and spiritual side of music. There's no doubt that the sounds of music have a power to conjure up another world. In a shaman's chant as he travels to the world of the dead, or the strains of Gregorian plainsong echoing in a monastery. And we still suspect some kind of divine inspiration when we witness a performance of a great artist like Vladimir Horowitz. In this program, art historian Robert Ferris Thompson knocks down the myth that you need a Duke of Saxony and a royal guild to create great music. And anthropologist Marina Roseman describes how the Temiar people of Malaysia learn songs from tree spirits of the jungle. But first, music historian Joseph Kerman says you can think of a composer in the 19th century as a godlike artist, but that the 17th century composer was more like someone who makes a candelabra.
Or you can think of Benvenuto Cellini, who was a goldsmith, but some of his things are, we say, quote, works of art, unquote. Where do you draw the distinction between doing a great platter or doing a beautiful salt cellar, which has Jupiter and Venus, you know? But I don't think that even Benvenuto Cellini thought of himself as a creator in that sense.
Kerman says Giuseppe Verdi epitomizes the whole process of transition from humble craftsman to celebrated artist.
Because Verdi starts as a craftsman within an established tradition. I could compare it to journalism. But gradually, as he got more and more experienced and richer and had more and more power, the entire history of 19th century impinged upon even an Italian. And his last works are more and more obsessed by this idea of creating a kind of abstract work of art. Now, he didn't quite think of this in the terms of the symbolist poets or about Wagner or Beethoven or any of the German artists, but he definitely had a kind of ideal of doing something better than musical journalism.
Kerman said God created music, not man. Anthropologist Tony Seeger studied the music of the Suya tribe in Mato Grosso, Brazil. He says the tribal groups of the Upper Xingu believe we human beings didn't invent music. Music was learned from either the spirits or from certain animals.
The group that I was working with in Mato Grosso, the Suya, believe that all music comes from outside the group. The people that we would call composers, people that introduce new songs, learn them from the trees or from the fish or from certain animals, and they have special hearing that allows them to learn it, and then they teach it to everybody else, and that reproduces the bringing in from outside the village of music, which is considered to be particularly powerful and particularly different than human speech.
The spiritual power of those songs, according to Seeger, can transform the singer.
As you sing a song in the final night of a ceremony, you're singing the song of, let's say, a kind of mouse, and during the night you actually become a mouse, or in the case of a deer ceremony, you become a deer. And so you become something that is neither human nor animal, but a kind of mixture, a powerful mixture of it. And that's done really through song and through singing all night long from the late afternoon until the early morning. And in the early morning, in the case of the suya, you're such an animal that the animal part of you has to be killed. And that's usually done by your sister running out and piercing what you're wearing with a large hunting arrow. And you are stripped of your animal decorations, and then you are saved and become human again.
Ceremonial music of the Suya tribe, recorded in Brazil. Anthropologist Marina Roseman went to Malaysia and studied the Temiar people, who learn songs from spirits in their dreams. Roseman says it begins when the Temiar travel through the jungle, passing mountains and trees and rivers. Then they go to sleep.
And during their sleep, the spirits of the various landforms that they've passed or interacted with in some way emerge as spirit guides. They take shape as small humans. So the spirit of a tree, for example, may emerge taking shape as a small human and say to the dreamer, whose spirit has also emerged and taken shape as a small replica of himself, the spirit of the tree says, I've seen you walking here. I desire you. I want to become involved with you. I want to be your teacher. It's a combination of teacher, student, father, son, and sometimes spouse relationship, a mixture of kinds of the relationships that occur between the spirit and the dreamer.
After the dreamer wakes up, he teaches the song to his village in the same way as the spirit taught him.
At first, it's his own voice, but later, as he sings, the spirit who taught him originally the song begins to sing. Sindo, 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 hel, he, yao. And then the chorus would respond and repeat that. And then the medium again would sing another line. Yu, 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 gura, yu, gura, yu, ya, lo, yu. Sindo na heu he yao. And then again the chorus would repeat, and this would go on line by line.
Of the Temiar people of Malaysia. We're talking about the creative spirit this time on The Nature of Music. Art historian Robert Ferris Thompson has a theory that the Pygmy people of Central Africa have the oldest stock of musical sounds on Earth.
And what are they? Well, one is a yodel, oscillating between high and low and head and chest, and another is I go ie and you go ue, and the third person in the room goes he, and suddenly e-he-he. And you've got a melodic structure, but cannot get off the ground without the group, which to me is just about the most egalitarian type of music structure imaginable. Thank you.
Thompson says that the Pygmy people also have the leisure time to create this complex polyphony.
If you're a woman and you want to have time to practice singing, well, you've got all the time in the world because you can gather, a woman can gather in one day enough berries and roots and tubers to feed her band for 3 days. So that's one day on and 3 days off. And men, on the male side, if they're lucky enough to bag an antelope by jerking that beef, they can live for weeks off of it. And if a couple of lucky hunts and you've got the whole damn month off. So what does this mean? Well, many people are puzzled by the fact that these, quote, simple hunters and gatherers, quote, the little people, all these racist patronizing terms that are just bandied about even by professors who ought to know better. What they're missing is the leisure. And most people think that you've got to have a royal palace with a royal guild of artisans and, you know, the Duke of Saxony serving as a patron to the rise of German music or whatever. But all you need, if you're a hunter and gatherer, is a couple of lucky shoots with your bow and arrow and this continual gathering on the woman's side. And what you've got is hours for training in polyphony.
Song of rejoicing after returning from a hunt. Polyphony of the Babenzeli Pygmies of the Central African Republic. Thompson says that in another part of Central Africa, the Bakongo people have concepts and words and images which link spirituality to music.
Okay, the Congo word for spirit, M-P-E-E-V-E, Mpeve. It really means flag. So you see instantly they're saying there's something out there, like the wind activates the flag and becomes our banner, the banner of Lord Jesus that we follow under when they became Christian. We see cloth activated by invisible force, and that they use as the most concrete metaphor for spirituality. You feel it, you see it mirrored in something else, but it's a highly sophisticated way of rendering spirituality. Spirituality is that wind-like, invisible, yet strong force, which comes from what they call Great God Almighty, Nzambi Mpungu.
Thompson says that the Bakongo think of music as a divine wind.
That music rolls over your eardrums. The ear is a specialized organ of touch. And this wind of sound will touch you and create what they call mayembo or zakama. Mayembo means the divine shimmy, where you begin to tremble on your shoulder blades and shake. And you shake and shake, and when you come out of that shake, you're another person. You have received the spirit. The spirituality would be defined as that ethical discipline or science which will allow you to capture the wind of the Lord in your body momentarily and become the Lord for an hour or 15 minutes or whatever the time is, because spirituality is concretized in spirit possession.
The ultimate question about spirituality and music might be, why do we make music? Again, Robert Ferris Thompson.
First of all, let's take the most anti-musical thing imaginable, death. And your grandmother's a horrific frost forms on her eyes, and she's gone, and they can't resuscitate anymore, and the little wavy line turns to an annihilating straight line, like that incredible moment in 2001 when Hal went around by computer murdering the people on the ship. And their life scales, which were full of all kinds of wonderful oscillations, suddenly all turn to a buzzing straight line. Now, what could be less musical than one single buzzing note of nothing? The point being that music is squares off against the great adversary. And when we die, in many West African, but particularly among the Bakongo, they have this rule, why make music? Well, you better make it now, because the soul must not go off in wrath. The soul must not go off weeping. This was the rationale, the production of music to fill the air with those days when the guy who's just died, when he was a happy, strapping athlete and he could dance, outdance everyone in the valley when he was 21 and he was a son of a gun. We take those rhythms and pound them into the area around his casket and send him off to glory with the strongest, most athletic, most joyous noises we can produce. Now, this shocked people when Africans came over to the New World. They could not believe that people would be happy and celebrating at funeral. They missed the point completely. The point was to honor the soul as it goes off, create the most joyous sound battery imaginable. Now, this is clearly the rationale for the New Orleans jazz funeral.
The concept of music creating its own space, transforming the spiritual air, according to Marina Rosman, can be found in many religions. Music originates in the body, she says, and then leaves the body and crosses space.
You see that in music in many, many churches in the United States, from Pentecostal Baptist, from gospel singing, to Gregorian chant, and the hours that are kept in various monasteries. Music becomes a way of originating in the body and yet pushing out into space, out into acoustic space. And there's certainly acoustic space has its ends in that the sound fades, but we don't see it. So for all intents and purposes, it could be reaching the divine. That's one direction. Now, there's also the idea of transcendental in terms of changing one's inner relationship, one's inner state, and moving to an altered state, and thereby connecting with the divine, not through projecting one's voice, in a sense, but through changing one's state.
In Zen Buddhism, there's an expression. This is a Japanese expression, Ichi on Jobutsu. The direct translation of that would be one note enlightenment. The idea is that a man has, say, studied Zen in the temple for a while, and he's approaching that point where he's about to become enlightened. He may have been searching for this experience all his life, or yeah. But he's walking along, maybe a bamboo grove or something like that, and he hears one note from the shakuhachi, and in that moment has the awakening experience. Now, the fact that there is an expression, Ichi on Jobutsu, means that it didn't just happen once, right? That it's a philosophical kind of a concept that exists within Zen. Within Japanese Buddhism, that it's possible from simply the sound of the shakuhachi, the one note coming at you from the shakuhachi, to achieve a level of satori.
Marina Rosman said that music can move you to an altered state of mind and thereby approach the divine. And Zen Buddhists believe that one note can bring enlightenment. But the topic of music and altered states of mind is confused by careless thinking, according to French ethnomusicologist Gilbert Rouget. In his recent book, Music and Trance, Rouget says that there are two major methods of altering consciousness through music, shamanism and possession.
Le chaman en transe.
The shaman in a trance leaves this world, or is supposed to leave this world and to travel to another world. In particular, he leaves this world to go meet the souls of the people who are sick and who have come to him to be cured. And also, he accompanies the dead into the other world. Therefore, the shaman is characterized by his trip. And this trip is a change of world. Whereas the possessed is visited by the gods. He changes identity, but he doesn't change world. The possessed is always here. He changes identity because instead of being the person that we know, he becomes the god that has inhabited him. But he doesn't change world. He's always there. Therefore, you can establish an opposition, which seems to be confirmed everywhere. The shaman, it's a change of world. The possessed, it's a change of identity.
Rouget says that there's a fundamental difference between music for the shaman and music for the possessed.
The shaman, as I have said, is someone who masters his own trance and who is a musician, in the sense that he sings the songs, he plays the musical instruments that will make him go into the trance. He starts his own trance by singing or by making music, that is, by beating a drum or by using some kind of rattle.
But music for the possessed, says Rouget, is unlike the shaman's music. The possessed goes into a trance because of sounds made by musicians whose job it is to do just that. It's like the voodoo rituals of Haiti, where the drummers make the music and the dancers become possessed by the spirit. There's a mystical sect in Bengal, in northern India, who call themselves Bawals. They devote their lives to teaching the message that the mind-body is the sole instrument for achieving a better state of being. The members wander from village to village, spreading their religious philosophy through music and dance and mystical poetry.
In the village life, music is one of the most attractive things, much more attractive than a written tract. So through the music, the Bawal gurus could spread the belief that they believed in easily. The relationship between music and the philosophy is very simple. He said, our guru, Nityananda, he figured out that you cannot achieve your supreme being without joy, not through penance, but through joy. And music is a medium in which one could find one's own joy and reach the highest of ecstasy. But the Bawals, they always use any kind of symbol that they see and relate that symbol to their quest of achieving a rapport with the Supreme Being.
The Bawals are generally illiterate, and so are their listeners in the villages. Their poetry is filled with everyday symbols. This song has a bicycle metaphor running through it. The song says that we must take care of our bodies just as we take care of the bicycle's tires and brakes and spokes and its safety devices.
Watch out, the headlight is focuses, so you got to be careful. There may be potholes, you may fall into the trap. So is your life's journey. You got to watch out. There are so many traps, so many potholes, you got to steer clear of them. Use that headlight. It's all in our system, in our own individual physical system. So why must we waste time seeking the answers in regard to finding capital H him, or in regard to finding the state of mind? The answer lies in our body.
Mystical poetry and music of the bowels of Bengal. This is The Nature of Music. You can get a free program guide and cassette tape information for The Nature of Music series by writing to The Nature of Music, NPR, Washington, D.C., 20036. Again, write to The Nature of Music, NPR, Washington, D.C., 20036. Our program on the creative spirit of music is written and produced for Garuda Productions by Carl Signell and Deborah Jane Lamberton. John Widoff is the mix engineer and Michael Wilpers is the research assistant. The executive producer for the series is Dr. Carl Signell. This series is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting through NPR's Satellite Program Development Fund. I'm Lynn Farmer. This is NPR, National Public Radio.